The Lord be with you. About a week ago, one of my favorite actors, the talented and wildly popular Benedict Cumberbatch, who also has a pretty terrific name, was doing an interview with Tavis Smiley on PBS. And in the course of their conversation, the topic of racial inequality in the entertainment industry came up. And in the middle of expressing his concern, he said, "As far as colored actors go, it gets really difficult in the UK." Did you hear that? Totally a slip of the tongue, not the best choice of words in 21st century America. Well, the internet took notice. And in no time, the reaction to Cumberbatch's outdated and potentially offensive language was trending on everybody's feed. And to his credit, there were no excuses or sorry, not apologies from a publicist or something. He quickly posted in People magazine, he said this, "I'm devastated that I've caused an offense by using this outmoded terminology. I offer my sincere apologies. I make no excuse for my being an idiot. And I know the damage is done. I can only hope this incident will highlight the need for correct usage of terminology that is accurate and inoffensive. Thank you, Mr. Cumberbatch." The 21st century court of public opinion moves pretty fast. And our media cycle is swift and ruthless because the way we talk about people matters. It matters a whole lot more than it used to. We live in the era of check your privilege, gender sensitivity, cultural diversity, racial history, awareness, inclusion, and equality. And our choice of words can have a huge impact. As a result, many of us are especially tuned in to the words and the turns of phrase that people use, language that might betray hidden prejudice or insensitivity, stereotypes, jokes, names and phrases that degrade and devalue people. We can think of all sorts of words that carry this kind of power. We gentle Canadians are sensitive to this language. Not only because it hurts and demeans people, and not just because all those comments on YouTube are so monstrous and depressing, but because this language exposes a regrettable reality in our culture, and it reflects back a shameful part of ourselves that we would rather just ignore. Which is one of the reasons today's reading from Mark's Gospel is such a tricky bit of scripture. This story hashed out in the first half is six little verses. Mark recounts a story of Jesus and a Syrophoenician woman, the Jewish rabbi and the pagan stranger. This is a difficult story that presents us with some interpretive problems, you could say. Because it is an awkward exchange. It's generated many, many responses and interpretations over the years. Language studies, careful readings, biblical scholars hashing through it, critics, theologians over the years, people trying to make sense of a tricky bit of scripture. And the problem is that some of the solutions and some of these interpretations come with their own theological and interpretive baggage. Explanations that just create more questions. Answers that don't wrap up nice and tidy. Mark's account gives us only the most basic details. But I would say that with a little effort, with the witness of the Spirit, some imagination, we can hear the gospel in this text together. So let's find the context. We'll recap the story, and then we're going to look at two interpretations that are the most common. We catch up with Jesus and his disciples in verse 24. And it says, From there he set out and went away to the region of Tyre. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know he was there. They're hiding away. They're soaking up some rest and relaxation. Jesus' ministry has been extremely busy. In chapter 6 alone, he was rejected in his hometown. John the Baptist was beheaded. He catered a miraculous meal for 5,000 people. Then he healed some people by the Sea of Galilee. Then he walked on the water. And today's text starts with a story about Jesus and his disciples on retreat. It's time to catch up on sleep, maybe read a good book. They're going to play some bocce ball. And I heard that John is going to do a meditative workshop on some of the passages from Henry Nouwen's The Wounded Healer. You don't want to miss that. This is downtime, a little shade, a little rest, before another tour of healing ministry, feeding and teaching. Jesus and the disciples have gone out of their way to disappear, reducing the risk of any encounters with a pesky hometown crowd. They've gone to a place called Tyre. Now, Tyre, in Jesus' time, was a Phoenician city-state in decline. For over 1,000 years, Phoenician ships had ruled the sea, navigating with the stars. Tyre was a fortified marina that produced purple cloth, glass, supplied the Mediterranean with lumber and goods. They no longer exist as a people today, but incidentally, the Phoenicians are still with us. Their alphabet, the first real alphabet, is the great granddaddy to the alphabet we use today. In the first century, after a few empires had come and gone, though, Tyre and the neighboring Phoenician cities were part of the Roman province of Syria. That's where we get the term Syro-Phoenician. It situates a person and a people in a place and a time of Roman rule. Syro-Phoenicians are just another conquered people taking up strategic place in an occupied land. And to be clear, Jesus and disciples are not in what you would call friendly territory. There's a lot of bad blood here. The book of Joshua tells us that this is the land that the children of Israel considered their land, a portion of land they were promised long ago, land that they thought they should have conquered and settled in. And they never really did, and they never really got over it. These pesky pagans just want to keep on living their lives. It's so annoying. Time and again, even today, we see that history gets ugly, really ugly, when the land you think you rightfully own is populated by a people that you hate. Somehow, despite their best efforts, Jesus and the disciples had tried to hide out, but a local woman has found out where Jesus is. She's a desperate mother who catches wind of this great healer in the neighborhood. She's a brave woman because she makes her way past 12 burly working-class men and throws herself at the feet of Jesus, begging him to cleanse her daughter of an unclean spirit. And this woman has more than a few strikes against her. She's born the wrong race in the wrong land. She's the wrong gender, and she's pleading for a daughter with all of the same problems. The ancient world was not a safe or kind place for women at the best of times. And on the ladder of influence and power, there's not very many lower rungs. Men of stature and learning wouldn't dream of entertaining a request or even a conversation with a woman like this. So Jesus replies, "Let the little children be fed first, for it is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Yeah, that's where the story gets dicey, because it really is the word of the Lord this time. The woman with no value who comes to Jesus begging for healing is met with a brush off, a derogatory insult, a slur, just the sort of thing she might have expected, and not a very original one either. Dog was a really common term for unworthy people who are essentially vermin. It reads in the Babylonian Talmud, as sacred food was intended for men, but not for dogs, the Torah was intended to be given to the chosen people and not to the Gentiles. This was a tried and true oldie but a goodie insult with plenty of racism and prejudice and degrading language woven into it. Super hard for our 21st century ears to process. So what's going on here? Interpretation number one. Let's call it the grouchy Jesus. Or if you like, just the plain reading of the story. Jesus was sick and tired of people's relentless nagging, and yet here, during his off hours, he tried to get away. He's approached by another loser. A loser who was sidetracking him from the true ministry of Israel that he needed to prepare for. Grouchy Jesus snaps at her and throws a little salt in the wound for good measure, just so she knows her place. This is probably not the Jesus you met in Sunday school. But we have read the other gospel stories. And we know that Jesus we meet here had an emotional life. They tell us he would grow tired. He needed time alone. He wept and he grieved. He would snap at the disciples. He would get frustrated with them. We have to admit it's even a little gratifying when he calls Pharisees a brood of vipers. Over history, a good many interpreters read the story in this light. Even the people who wrote today's litany read the story in this light. Martin Luther, a man known for his big mouth, his hot temper, and some racial slurs of his own, says this: "What a superb and wonderful object lesson this is, therefore, to teach us what a mighty, powerful, all-availing thing faith is. Faith takes Christ captive in his word when he is angriest and makes out of his cruel words a comforting inversion. As we see here, you say the woman responds that I am a dog. Let it be. I will gladly be a dog. Now give me the consideration that you give a dog." Thus she catches Christ in his own words, and he is happy to be caught. "Very well," she says. "I'm a dog. I ask no more than a dog's rights. I'm not a child, nor am I of Abraham's seed, but you are a rich lord, and you set a lavish table." For the grouchy Jesus solution, the woman's reply makes all the difference. And really, this has to be one of the all-time greatest comebacks in all of history. Oscar Wilde would have been so proud. "Sir, even the dogs under the table catch the children's crumbs." Take that, grouchy Jesus. And so Jesus snaps out of his grouchy haze and sees the error of his ways. Jesus heals the little girl immediately. With our grouchy Jesus reading, this is a story about relentless faith. It's a story about a woman's mama bear courage. It's about a rabbi's short-sightedness, a moment of humanity. The Syrophoenician woman joins the ranks of people like Abraham and Job, standing their ground, raising their voices, holding God to his promises. The Syrophoenician woman is like Malala Yousafzai. Have I said that right? Yousafzai? Malala Yousafzai. It's a hard name. The brave Afghani girl standing up to a bully. The rabbi becomes a student. Jesus, the man, catches fresh glimpses of God's kingdom. This is a learning moment for the Lord. The kingdom revealed in a moment when Jesus kind of blows it. It's a wake-up call for Jesus. But Many people are troubled by this reading. There are some problems. Because we have read the other gospel stories, and we know that the Jesus we meet there is, yes, an emotional being, but he was kind, he was loving, he was gentle, a champion of the poor who touched lepers and broke bread with sinners. He was visited by magi as a baby. He found faith in Roman soldiers and foreigners. He healed women and men, little boys, little girls. He allowed himself to be touched and blessed by women of poor reputation and social standing. And he even makes the hated Samaritan the hero of his most famous parable. This Jesus, who told stories about the little people on the fringes, people sleeping in ditches, finding their way into God's kingdom. Nobodies and outsiders who get an invitation and are blessed to find a seat at God's banquet table. Didn't Jesus tell us that we are worth so much more than many sparrows? Didn't Jesus tear down boundaries of race and religion, gender and social standing? And for the really big theological catch, if Jesus was sinless, is this sort of racist and cruel behavior really something he would have done? And so we come to interpretation number two. Let's call it Jesus and the Subversive Lesson. The scriptures are like a text message, but with no winky faces and no emojis. Mark tells us a quick story, but with only so many words on the page. We cannot hear Jesus' tone of voice. We can't see the look on his face. This is the between the lines reading of the story. This is not Jesus the grouch. This is Jesus setting up the most terrific switcheroo lesson in a public context. This isn't rudeness. This is an insult. It's a great demonstration of wisdom and wit on Jesus' part. This is insight. This is generosity. And it goes like this. Jesus sees the desperate woman, the outsider, who isn't worth anybody's time. And instead of simply ignoring her, instead of asking someone to remove her from the premises, which he could easily have done, he engages in a quick bit of banter with her. He sees something special in her. And with a twinkle in his eye and a knowing smile, he uses a tired, worn-out, racially charged cliché. It's not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs. Am I right, fellas? Woo! High fives, back slaps, laughter. Jesus sets his own trap, and then he lets him spring it on her. He takes one on the chin for the racial outsiders and the voiceless women everywhere. Not just in Tyre, but for all time. Because we are all God's children. This is, after all, the one time in all of Scripture when Jesus lets someone get the rhetorical better of him. The one time he doesn't get the last word or win the argument is with the Syrophoenician woman, of all people. In this single, quick, little exchange, a brief interruption on a seaside holiday, Jesus flips an entire human value system on its head. A tired old aphorism that got all the knowing laughs sound like the pathetic ramblings of some old racist. It's the joke now. Truth be told, in the last week I found something compelling about both readings of this story. Maybe you've got reasons to lean towards the grouchy Jesus reading, and the tale of a brave woman who schools the Lord. Or perhaps you are drawn to the subversive lesson. Jesus' wit and charm and insight win out. I want to encourage you, after the service, during coffee, in the narthex, over lunch, share your theological perspective with someone. How did you get there? Friends, This is a corporate effort, a great body of work. Theology is the practice of naming and sorting the realities of God's work in the world, even when we don't have quick and tidy answers. Sometimes we strain our eyes at the horizon of difficult questions. And other times we proclaim deep truths that have changed the very depths of our heart. These scriptures given to us, this gospel story, bears witness to the Christ at work in the world. Story of hope and healing, mystery and wonder, voices for the voiceless, words of grace for Syrophoenician women, and healing for their little ones, as unclean spirits are driven away. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.